This is Remarkable. Welcome to Remarkable, a marketing podcast for podcasters who aren't marketers. I'm your host and teacher, Dave Mooring, and I want to know what it takes to stand out, get noticed, and build a committed audience of listeners and fans. I'm on a quest to find out what makes a podcast remarkable, and I invite you to join me each week as I interview other podcasters, experts, and marketers. The Remarkable Podcast is part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. If you'd like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. This is episode number 11. In this episode of Remarkable, I have a conversation with an experienced podcaster, author, and co-founder of the world's largest international podcasting conference. He's an entrepreneur, salesman, and networker, or rather, a connector, who was known for his generosity and willingness to go out of his way to help others. During the interview, we discussed the impact podcasting has had on his business success, why going after big names might not be the best idea, the downside of a great podcast launch, and one big reason you shouldn't worry about your download numbers. He also shares creative ways to get more people to discover you, how to use events to grow your show, and several methods you can use to monetize your podcast. He's the author of Podcasting Good to Great and co-author of Stop Chasing Influencers. He's co-founder of the Academy of Podcasters Awards and the Podcast Movement Conference. He's the host of Starve the Doubts, and he's one of the most generous people I know. Here's Jared Easley. Jared, welcome to the Remarkable Podcast.
David Mooring. I like your last name because I think David Moore, not less. That's your nickname.
Well, I thought you were going to mention something related to you living near the ocean in a mooring in a boat. That's usually what
and I probably should have thought of that, but I wasn't smart enough to think of that. So I was thinking more, not less.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, welcome to the show. I appreciate you giving us some time today.
Likewise, and I look at the group of people that you've had on the show so far, and I kind of feel humbled. And I would say if your show was a neighborhood, you know, me being a part of moving into this neighborhood, I feel like I have the ugliest house, but I'm in the neighborhood, baby. I'm in the hood. So the neighbors may not like
me.
No,
that's not true.
My grass might not look good. You know, the HOA's after me, but I'm in the David Mooring neighborhood now. So that's how it is.
Well, I'm going to have to throw a compliment back your way, but I wouldn't have the guest if I hadn't gone to the Podcast Movement Conference. So that's,
oh yeah,
that's where all this came to be about. So kudos to you for that.
Oh, well, I'm sure we'll talk about some of that.
Yeah.
Me too. Yeah.
Let's step back in history just a little bit, because I don't know your background, but tell us a little bit about what you did coming out of college and how did you get from, you know, that time period to what you're doing these days?
Well, I was in the military and enjoyed the time in the Navy. I got to live in New England and Hawaii, which if you ever get a chance, go for it. And when I got out, I really wasn't happy with the role I was in the Navy. And what's funny, Dave, is I didn't dislike the Navy. I actually liked the Navy. I just didn't like the job that I had. And I made every effort to try to transition to a different role, and they would not allow it. And I thought, that just seems counterintuitive. You know, they're going to lose good people in the military that probably stick around. I might have stuck around for several years. Who knows? But they said, no, you have to stay in this job that you hate. And who wants to do that? You know, and there's too much life to live. And I gave them, you know, several years. And I was like, okay, time to go. And so I moved on. And at the time, my sister, who I grew up being very, very close to, David, she and her family lived in Orlando. And she encouraged me, hey, come on over to Orlando. Let's reconnect. Let's, you know, if you want to go to school or work or whatever. But I wasn't real sure what I wanted to do when I got out.
And sure.
So I moved to Orlando more or less to be closer to my sister and her husband. And at the time, my nephew, they now have two more So there's three nephews now. But moved to Orlando, and Orlando ended up being a good place for me because some good growth came from that. And then long story short, I met my wife in Orlando, and she's originally from South Florida. And now I live in South Florida, and that's because my wife's from there. So I left out of a lot of stuff, but I got into this podcasting thing because I got into a personal development journey a few years back when I was pretty dissatisfied with the job that I had.
Uh-huh.
Sounds like a repetitive theme with me, doesn't it? I'm the common denominator here. What's wrong with me? But yeah, I wasn't real pleased with the situation, and I remember complaining to my wife about it. We were on a cruise for our anniversary, and it was just, you know, kind of a weekend cruise. And I'm sitting here complaining about, oh, this person did this and this situation happened. And can you believe this? And she finally very graciously said, hey, no more. I don't want to hear it. We're on our anniversary cruise. Don't talk about it. Either quit or find another job. But I don't want to hear it. Stop it. And it was consistent with some friends who had very kindly said the same thing. They're like, hey, you're being negative. And when I heard that from these people that I like and trust and know they're looking out for me, I knew, okay, yeah, it's not necessarily the circumstances, it's my attitude. And that led me to reading books and listening to podcasts and ultimately compelled me to say, hey, it'd be fun to start my own podcast. And wow, you know, what a journey that's been, because it's been over 3 years that I've been doing the podcast that I have and over 300 episodes. And those podcast episodes, while it's been a lot of work and it's certainly been trial and error and hills and valleys, I would say that there's been a blessing that's come from that because I've connected with a lot of interesting people. I've had ideas that I wouldn't have had otherwise. It's encouraged me to take steps and be brave and try some things in a business sense that I might not have had had the audacity to try in the years before. And yeah, so there's been some great things that have come from it with connections and with business and just learning something and growing personally. So yeah, I love this medium. I love the fact that you have your own podcast. I'm grateful to be, you know, talking to you today on this. And so I'm a big fan of podcasting, and that kind of led into the event that you loosely mentioned earlier, which is Podcast Movement. And I'm sure we'll touch on that again, but
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, just a number of wonderful things happened, like writing a book and starting an event, and you know, a few other things that didn't go so well. I had a company that I tested for a little while, and that was a company that I had a business partner with, and it was making money. It seemed like it was going on a reasonable path, and then I realized this guy that I was working with was stealing money, oh man, what a painful lesson to learn in business. You know, it's like, this is a guy that used to be a youth pastor, somebody I thought was completely honest. And, you know, you got to really be smart with who you're dealing with, and you got to understand what's going on. And unfortunately, some people will smile and talk the game, but then, you know, when you're not looking, they might be doing something different. So, but yeah, I had some frustrating lessons I had to learn early on.
Yeah, what line of work were you in around the time that you started podcasting 3 or 4 years ago?
I was in project management. Prior to that, I had worked for a company where I had kind of climbed up the ladder and done really well and became the top biller in this organization. And just a lot of that happened from the personal development kick. I realized, hey, I need to work on me. I need to be kind to people. I need to treat others well. I need to, you know, treat the customers well. I need to, you know, just really focus in. And in doing so, I had some really exciting wins with that company. And another organization kind of stole me away. They said, hey, you know, we know that you're doing well here and we want to offer you a job with more money. So I made the decision that the grass was greener. I look back now and I realize that may or may not have been the right thing to do. Hmm. But at the time I was like, well, that's, you know, more money, so I'm going to take it. And I did, but what happened, David, and I couldn't have foreseen this, there was no way to know, is a little over a year after that, it was December, and Christmas was coming up, and they, you know, the CFO calls me into his office, and that's not a big deal because I was friends with him. I talked to him often. He said, hey, we got to let you go. I was like, wow. What's going on? And, you know, it was just the financial health of the company at the time. It wasn't because I did anything wrong. It's just that's what happened. And I didn't see that coming, but some positive things still happened from that because I later was able to go back to the company I'd worked with prior to that. And work out a deal to be a consultant and a contractor with them. And so I still work with them and do some projects with them. And it's fantastic because I'm in a position to continue to grow a business, but also I have a client that I used to work for full time. And that's, you know, a nice source of income for our family that's pretty consistent that I probably wouldn't have had I not weathered that storm during the days that I wasn't real happy there, but then, you know, was able to work on myself and do the right thing and excel and then, you know, ultimately leave on good terms, which allowed me to be in a position to come back later on.
Yeah, that's great. And that's one of the questions that I have as I interview other podcasters is it's kind of hard to tell if there's an alter ego. So if the podcaster is making a living podcasting, or most of the time it seems to be some sort of hybrid or a side project. So it sounds like it's a little bit of both for you.
I don't make any, I don't pretend at all that my podcast is a big revenue generator. I know that it's not.
The consulting is your full-time.
There's other little things that I do on the side that provide income for me, and the podcast is more or less a way to grow my network and to learn, and it gives me ideas for some of the other stuff that I do. But I've not really made money from my podcast. If I have, it's not been anything worth talking about on this show.
Sure.
I don't like if I've given anybody the impression that I'm killing it with my podcast financially, then we can squash that rumor right now because that's just not true.
No, I've never gotten that sense. I was just
but that said, I in no way am negative toward podcasting. I love podcasting. I'll continue to podcast. There have been times when I thought, well, should I continue doing the show that I do? Because like anybody, I get discouraged. I don't see a certain result that I think I should have.
And sure,
that makes me kind of question what I'm doing. But, you know, as soon as I start to lean toward that path, I'm reminded through a tweet or an email or somebody contacts me and has benefited from what's happening there with the show. And that continues to encourage me and say, no, this is a good thing. You know, you're making friends. You're building your network. People are getting something out of it. And for now, this is a good thing to do. So, I would say the conviction I've had recently is I'm getting a lot more personally out of the podcast episodes where I chat with people who are kind of climbing up the ladder rather than the people on top of the mountain.
Hmm, that's good.
And, nothing against the people on top of the mountain, it just seems like I can relate better to someone who's in the trenches, who's working hard and who's generous. And not to say that people on top of the mountain aren't, but I've met a number who – while they're kind to give you their time, it's not really their focus or their desire to help you necessarily grow unless you're paying them exorbitant fees or, you know, something super substantial is in it for them. And so while some of those people are kind, I've realized that not putting all my focus on those people actually allows me to serve the people in the podcast who are listening and connect with good people who are collaborative in spirit. And that has actually helped the show to grow, which in the beginning when I started, I thought, well, I gotta have these major guests on the show that are big names, and if I can't do that, then the show's not going to be great, and no one's going to give me any credibility, and no one's going to listen. I realize now that wasn't true.
Yeah, no, that's a really good perspective. So, if you can think back to that point in time, what was your goal or objective for starting the podcast? What did you hope to get out of it when you started?
Oh man, it was delusional. I thought I'm going to interview these big name authors and, you know, people who've had success with entrepreneurship, and there's going to be an instant transfer of audience where people who are in their camp are going to also be in my camp. And then you accumulate that over, you know, 100 episodes or whatever. And the next thing you know, you got this massive platform and massive online audience, and you know, none of that happened.
Were you hoping to build that audience to sell books, or what were you hoping to accomplish with the audience?
At the time I didn't have anything to sell, so it was more growing the network, was the focus. But since then, I've put out 2 books, and you know, I've been a part of other projects and stuff. But a lot of those ideas came from interviewing guests on the podcast. So I got to really credit the podcast as to being the incubator for me. It's been the workbench, if you will.
Yeah.
Where, you know, the light bulbs have come on a few times and be like, okay, you know, I know I could go and do something kind of in my own way, but use some of the same strategies that some other people used and have my own results. And that has served me well for the most part. But like anything, there's no guarantees. You know, you can test to a point to see if something's going to be valid or not. But I think what Aisha Tyler said at Podcast Movement last year, she talked about success as persistence through failure. And failure is so hard, David. Like, it's so brutal. Like, I realize now, man, I'm a baby when it comes to failure. Like, I like to lick my wounds and you know, oh, you know, this wasn't supposed to happen to me. I wasn't supposed to lose. You know, I wasn't supposed to struggle. But really,
right,
that's
right.
Because everybody struggles. Everybody's had any kind of, you know, success in most cases have been through the trenches, who have had plenty of losses, have had plenty of wounds that they've had to, you know, lick and move on. And so I've had mine too. And I got to say, there have been times when I've kind of, I don't know about this. But, you know, then I hear some more encouraging stories and I get some emails and people are saying, hey, this is good stuff. This is helpful. And that encourages me to continue to be bold.
Sure, sure. Do you recall, like, what was your first big wake-up call once you started the podcast that it wasn't going to turn out as easy or as big as you were hoping?
Yeah, there's an 8-week window when new podcasters launch a show, and it's exciting because if you have a little bit of strategy with your podcast launch, you can be featured in iTunes in a section called New and Noteworthy, and there's some reasonable traffic that can be created from that opportunity. There's it's a nice discovery place where people can learn about your show, and there's a number of people that they'll check it out. And what's good about that is you're potentially being exposed and you have greater visibility. The problem with that is you might not be a great podcaster, so you're getting exposure, but your show's not awesome, and so people will kind of judge you based on that. So what happened was, you know, we had a nice spike in the beginning, but as soon as that honeymoon period was over, the thrill was gone, if you will.
Right.
You know, the numbers dipped so dramatically that I almost quit. I realized, like, this might not be worth it. Because, you know, at least I did. I got excited about the idea of, okay, I'm on a podcast and I'm going to talk to as many people as possible. And that's a handful of people. You know, it's easy to say, okay, well, those people don't matter. It's got to be a lot more than that for it to matter. But my encouragement is for someone who not to consider the numbers. If you're standing in front of a group and you're speaking to 25 people, you would likely be prepared and likely want to be professional and want to do the right thing by those 25 people. And I think, you know, that there could be a trap with podcasting where you say, okay, I can just mail this in because it's not many people listening. But I would encourage you not to subscribe to that idea. Definitely, you know, do your best with whatever it is you feel compelled to do. And if it's podcasting, you know, serve those 25 people if that's all it is. Don't be worried about having 2,500 if you don't have that. You know, start by loving the 25 and then you can build on it.
Yeah, that's really good advice. Is that kind of what got you through that slump and why you stuck it out?
Yeah, definitely. I got an email from someone who had encouraged me and said they got something out of one of the shows. And then that's when it occurred to me that, you know, the best way for me to start growing was to kind of do it the hard way. And one of the guests I had on the show, who's an author, who's someone I really look up to, is Seth Godin, a tremendous author.
I'm a big fan. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, rightfully so. He said something on the show I'll never forget. He said, sometimes the shortest route is the long way around. And I thought, okay, if I'm going to really be all in on this podcast, I need to be willing to take the long route. And the long route is getting to know people. It's becoming friends. It's generously connecting with the 25, you know? So that became my mission, is how can I start noticing other people that are listening? How can I, you know, be someone that is a friend to them, not someone that says, follow me, you know, because there's plenty of people out there that are like that. So that said, that's exactly the strategy that I followed. I started to notice people and try to be real authentic with that. And in doing so, we've talked about this before, David, it's a reciprocity and rapport is created. And I'll just touch on that for a moment.
Please.
When you're noticing people, in most cases, David will be like, hey, this guy Jared's a nice guy. You know, he noticed me. And I know I feel that way. If David notices me, I'm like, hey, yeah, David, he's a pretty cool guy. I think he's, you know, I like him. That's probably what I'm going to think. And over time, if you know, David and I have that rapport that's created from him being generous and noticing me, then it might come time that David launches a book or something comes out or something that he's involved in. And I say, man, I really like David. David's got this book or he's got this thing I'm doing. I want to help David because he's been generous to me. I want to check it out. Or even if it's not something I'm super interested in, I want to buy it because I like him. I want to support him. Or at a bare minimum, I want to share it on my social media because I like David. And I want people to know about what he's up to.
Yeah.
And imagine if you multiply that by 10 people or even 25, and 25 people are saying, hey, we really like David. Well, that's what we call creating the army. You know, nobody notices you when you're by yourself. But when you have an army with you, everyone notices. And the way that you create the army is you start with a handful of people and you just notice them. You be generous. You create that rapport. And then eventually that rapport will yield reciprocity. And when you got that army, people will be like, hey, we love David. You know, and more people are going to say, well, what's David up to? Let's go check it out.
Yeah. And I want to add to that, just as you were talking, I was reminded that I think a lot of people are so caught up on the numbers and trying to get their hundreds that they overlook the first 10 or 15, 20, 25, like you said.
Yeah.
And so you can never get to 100 if you don't start with the first 10 to 25.
So true.
So what's been something that's been really successful? So, you know, you kind of got through the dip, referring back to Seth Godin, and so you keep going. Was there a particular point in time over the last 3 years where you hit a big spike or a big win, or was it just a steady climb the whole time?
I think there's been some encouraging things that have happened, but when we say big win, I want to caution that because, you know, what's big to one person may not be big to someone else. An example would be I saw someone else write a book and they self-published it and then they hit number one in the particular category that they were in Amazon Books or Amazon Kindle.
Right.
And I remember at that moment I thought, wow, number one, I'm super excited for my friend. But then also I'm like, hey, I could do that too. And I should do that. If he could do it, surely it could be done. Right. And I didn't say that to belittle his accomplishment. It just encouraged me to say, hey, I want to do something too. And so writing a book and having it be number one in its category on Amazon, again, that might be old hat for some, but for me, that was a big deal. Launching a crowdfunding campaign and having that campaign be successful, that was another win. You know, getting with friends and getting with people within the podcasting community and asking them to be a part of an event and then seeing that event grow over the last 3 years, I mean, that's been tremendous. It's been a lot of hard work. Certainly not a lot of financial gain, but we've seen just some exciting things. And just this last couple of weeks, we announced that Dropbox is the platinum sponsor for the event that I'm talking about, which is Podcast Movement.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And, you know, I got to say, that's a miracle to be able to say that. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, that was just an idea. It was a crowdfunded campaign, and then we tested an event in Dallas. And now we're to a point where a company like Dropbox is willing to invest in our event and be a part of it. And then, you know, they're not the only ones. There's a number of other organizations that are involved in that event now. And I just think, wow, that's a miracle. You know, that really is amazing. So, you know, there have been some wins, but, you know, I don't for a moment pretend that those wins have saved the day. And then I'm sitting on a beach with a laptop sipping Mai Tais and never working and never having to, you know, work, be, you know, conscious of money and conscious of bills and conscious of responsibilities. And that's not where I'm at today. But that said, I'm thankful for the opportunities that have opened up. And I'm thankful for the wisdom that was gleaned from conversations like this, David, where I learned from people. And then that gave me the encouragement to say, okay, me too. Let me try to take some baby steps towards some goals and then seeing some progress happen. But again, like we mentioned earlier in the show, as many nice little exciting things that have happened, there's been probably 10 times the, you know, failures that have popped up. And I mean, yesterday was a challenging day, you know, little things popped up here and there. And then at the end of the day, I was like, man, I feel discouraged today. And, you know, I even put a message on my Facebook. I was like, hey, how do you guys deal with discouragement? And it was amazing. You know, a number of people said, well, when I deal with discouragement, here's what I do. And it was answers that were kind of funny, ranging from, well, I bust out the Remy Martin, you know, or somebody saying, hey, I read a book, or, you know, I listen to music, or I exercise, or I talk with friends that have my back, or I read my Bible, or I pray, or, you know, all these different answers. And And, you know, if anything, it just reminded me, man, I have a lot to be thankful for. And even in the challenging days, I'm very, very blessed. And I know that. And because I'm blessed, it just helps me to be grounded and help me to remind myself, hey, just one day at a time, don't worry about what you can't control.
Yeah. And it's always good to know that you're not alone, that you're not the only person that's, you know, going through tough times from time to time. And yeah, it's really helpful to have that community to support.
Oh yeah. And you know this better than anyone, David. I mean, you might have a rough day, but man, your rough day is nothing compared to somebody in a third world country, yeah, you know, who's struggling to survive, you know, and I mean, it's all perspective. So I'm very blessed. I'm very grateful. And yeah, I mean, some days are better than others, but I try to remind myself what's important and stay focused on those things.
Let's talk about the podcast movement a little bit, because I don't know a whole lot about the history of it. I mean, I had attended last year, and I'll be there again this year. But how did that come about? I know you teamed up with a couple of other people to start it, and you've alluded to a Kickstarter campaign, and that rings a bell. But where did the idea come from, and how did you get it started?
Well, I attended a large event in Las Vegas that had podcasters attending, but they weren't kind of the main attendees. This conference had a number of different tracks and different learning opportunities, and one of them was podcasting. So that was a big place for podcasters to come together back a few years back. And I remember chatting with a number of podcasters at this event, and a lot of them kept saying, well, why isn't there a podcasting event? And when I heard it, I thought the same thing. I was like, well, I've thought that. Why isn't there one? And then, I was crazy enough to think, well, maybe myself and a couple other people could create this. And we had listened to enough business podcasts, David, that we knew it's not wise to just pour a ton of resources and time into something that you have no idea is going to work. So we tested with Kickstarter. We said, okay, we're going to reach out to podcast friends. We're going to try to get people together to say, hey, we're going to attempt to create a podcasting event. We need your help. We need you to, number one, would you speak at this event? Would you share it with your network? Would you support it financially? Because, you know, it's not free to do events. We need to at least enough money to, you know, secure the venue and things of that nature. And we decided, okay, let's do it through a crowdfunding campaign. If people support the campaign with their wallet, we'll move forward. And if they don't, then we don't need to waste time creating something that people don't want.
Yeah.
And so we tested with a Kickstarter. We thought, man, it'd be amazing to raise $11,000. That might be asking too much. And, you know, within that first day, within 24 hours, we had over $11,000, David. And then at the end of 30 days, we had over $30,000. So we basically had three times what we needed. And that was a big validator. Like, within the course of that campaign to the actual first event, we changed venues three times because we kept outgrowing it.
Wow.
Which was like, whoa, what's going on? And then we learned a lot of things we didn't know. Like, okay, if you're going to book a real good venue for a reasonably sized conference, you got to book it a year in advance. So, you know, there was a lot of stuff that we learned in year one. And I got to say, Dan Franks, who's my business partner, he was absolutely relentless. He poured so much effort and time into this, and I did my absolute best to hang with him and help him. But I gotta say, man, he was the glue for sure. And without Dan, you know, we wouldn't have gotten to the level we've gotten to. But we basically pulled ourselves together, did that first event. We decided, hey, let's do it again. We pre-sold the second year. We didn't do another crowdfunding campaign. We just pre-sold tickets. And now we're doing our third year, which will be in Chicago. And, you know, to see all the lessons that we've learned from year one to year three. I mean, we're talking year one, we thought, could we get 100 people together? That turned into 600, David. And then year two, we had over 1,200. And now year three, we're expecting at least 1,500 in Chicago. So, you know, we're just continuing to see encouraging growth. I mentioned Dropbox as a part of it this year. Audible from Amazon, and you know, a number of other companies. I don't need to, you know, name drop, but
sure.
I mean, it's just impressive to see how this thing has taken a life of its own. It's been tons of work. It's been very encouraging, but also discouraging. I remember last year, you know, we were working really hard, and we thought, hey, this might be the year we actually get a paycheck from this thing. And then, you know, we realized once the event was over that there were still some payments due, and we ended up not being able to pay ourselves even after year two.
Wow.
And I remember that was a discouraging moment. It was,
yeah, I can imagine.
That was a hard conversation to have with my wife. I remember thinking, man, we've poured so many hours into something for two straight years that just haven't given us a dime. And it, that was heartbreaking. But I remember after a week or so, it's just pick yourself up. And for me, I prayed about it and just I said, all right, we're not giving up. We've proven we can put together something good. Now we just need to learn from our mistakes and put up guardrails to protect ourselves and try to make this thing sustainable financially. And so year three is lessons learned collectively from year one and year two. And this may be the year that we actually profit from it. But regardless, whether we do or not, you know, hopefully we do. We've got a community that's excited about it, that is supporting it and that's sharing it. And we're seeing a really exciting thing happen in the podcast community. And podcast movement is definitely a massive part of that. So, yeah, I think that's the encouragement. You're not going to know everything, David, and we didn't know everything, but we got advice from people we trust and had some experience, and then we, you know, did our best with the responsibilities that we had, and then we learned what we didn't know.
That's awesome. Do you have future plans in mind, or are you just taking it one year at a time? I mean, do you have kind of an ultimate goal, what you're trying to get to?
I think yes and no. I mean, We're flexible in the growth and the direction it's heading in, but at the same time, we already know where we're going to be next year. We already have the venue secured, so yeah, I mean, we're for sure having an event next year. This event's in Chicago. It takes place in July. The following year will be in August in Anaheim, California. So I mean, it's awesome. Yeah, it's on. It's happening.
That's
so
great.
In that case, yeah, we have ideas of what we think is going to work. We've discussed some of those things. We're not necessarily going to make all those public yet, but
yeah, sure.
You know, in a sense, though, you have to kind of take it year by year because there's some things that you can't learn until you go through it, and there's feedback that will come from this event that will be brand new, and that, you know, we'll learn from that and then apply that into the following year.
Yeah. So is it public knowledge now where it's going to be in 2017?
I don't know that we're like publicly announcing it, but I don't mind sharing it. I mean, okay. It's not like we're necessarily hiding it, but yeah, it'll be at Anaheim in 2017. So.
Very cool.
Yep.
Let me kind of scale back down or come back down to a smaller viewpoint. I mean, that's really appreciate the insight on that. And as someone that attended last year, I thought a very good conference, very well done. And the people, like you said, the people there were just amazing. The community is amazing. Can't wait to get there again and just reconnect with some people I met and also to meet a lot more new people. So kudos to you all for doing that. As far as your podcast, so tell me kind of where are you today with your podcast? I know you have several, you have multiple guests or co-hosts and things like that. When did you kind of get into multiple co-hosts and how did that come about?
The show has gone through a number of pivots, and one of the things that I learned over, you know, probably about a year and a half was if I could include more people, it seems to have a better result. It started with just having a guest, and then, you know, that kind of evolved to, hey, maybe it'll make sense to not just have a guest, but maybe have a co-host, a guest co-host, and myself and a guest co-host would interview the guest. And then that kind of turned into, let me try a permanent co-host. And then that kind of evolved into, you know, let's just kind of try panels and, you know, different things. So I've tried a number of variations of tests for the podcast. And the one that seems to work well is when it's me and usually at least one or two other people and sometimes three. And it could be a focus on a specific person where we're in a sense interviewing one person, or it could be like a panel discussion where we're saying, okay, today's topic is ABC, and then each of us give our perspective on ABC. And what I found is when you include more people will talk about the episode. They're more likely to share it. And I think a reason for that is they're involved. They've been a part of it. And so when you're a part of something, you're probably more likely to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because it involves you. And so that's a key takeaway is whatever your idea is, whatever you're wanting to pursue, is the more you can incorporate other people into it, the greater the visibility that is likely to have on your idea, because other people will talk about it because they're involved. So that's a lesson that I learned from the podcast, actually, is when it was just me and a guest, and the guest would never share it. It was just me sharing it. But when I started bringing a guest co-host on, it was funny because the guest of the show would likely start sharing it because there was two co-hosts. So it was almost like there's a social
kind of like they feel obligated because
peer pressure kind of, which is, it's cheesy, but I think it was psychological. I mean, we never said, hey, please share the episode. Right. I mean, we say, hey, here's the link and you're welcome to check it out. But I saw a greater number of guests start sharing the episodes when I had a guest co-host. And I think part of the reason was it was not just me, it was another person. And when it was another person, it was kind of like, okay, now I'm potentially burning two people if I don't share this. You know what I mean? Right. And that wasn't true for everyone, but it was true more so. And I would also credit David, the shares were increased partially because the show was, it was just more episodes. It had been through, you know, more time and, you know, I think more people were aware of it. So I'm sure that was part of it too.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit for those that might not have listened to your show. You've alluded to it a little bit, but what's the goal or what's the value add for people to listen in? What do they get out of it?
Well, the show's called Star of the Doubts, and it, in most cases, is a person or multiple people sharing stories of how they've navigated some kind of hurdle and how they worked through that and the result that came from it, good and bad. And it's not always someone talking about, okay, I started a business and I don't work a day job anymore. It's turned into, hey, here's a lady who her husband passed away and now she's got to raise three kids. What was that like? You know, what happened when the water heater broke and she didn't know how to fix it? How did she manage that? And there's a story about a young girl who had a dream to, you know, be the first Asian American female to ride a bike across the United States. And she just decided, I'm going to do it. And she did it. I mean, it's an amazing story. AngieAcrossAmerica.com is that website you can check out. But Angie was on the show. Again, another guest was a lady who loved Etsy, which is kind of like the eBay for handcraft stuff.
And yep.
She basically took over a podcast that had thousands of listeners because the host of the podcast just stopped doing the show. They were pursuing another dream. And she listened to the show religiously. And when it stopped, she reached out to the host and said, hey, why did this stop? And said, oh, I'm pursuing something else now. And she's like, well, can I host the show? Can I take it over? And the lady was like, sure. And so now she's like the host of this podcast that has thousands of listeners, more listeners than I have for sure. And she just inherited a show by asking. And I think, well, that's a miracle. You know, like, there's so many other stories. This is my friend Jeff and his wife. Their daughter struggled with cancer, and they had to go to St. Jude, and just that whole story. I mean, there's so many good stories on Star of the Doubts of more than just the person that, you know, like I said, was not happy with a job and moved to an entrepreneur opportunity. There's plenty of stories like that, but there's just some other good ones too that are about life. They're about losing weight. They're about being healthy. They're about, you know, overcoming something that was really hard. And, you know, a story of a lady just recently, she paid off $56,000 in debt. And it was like, man, you know, there's so many people that feel stuck with their finances, you know. And this was an encouraging story. This lady was right there with them, but then she made a few changes. She shares about the changes. And then, you know, a few years later, it took time, but she reached her goal. So, yeah, man, I love Star of the Doubts. I think it's a great show. But I think people should listen to your show first, and when they run out of episodes and they're waiting on the next episode, then if they decide, hey, let me add one more, you know, I've got time for another episode.
Well, you're very generous.
I believe that. I think you have a good show. People listen to your show, they're doing the right thing. They're being smart. They're being proactive. That's part of making moves and being wise.
Well, thanks, Jared. Just a couple more questions about how you've grown your audience. And just a little bit of background, you spoke to our North Carolina podcasting meetup a few weeks ago and provided some really great tips. So not to go through that whole presentation again, but for somebody that's listening that's trying to think about how they can grow their audience or how they can connect with more people, what's one or two of your, you know, maybe your most favorite tips that you would recommend for maybe thinking outside the box or doing something different? And you just mentioned having multiple co-hosts or getting more people involved. I think that's a great tip. Any other one or two other ones that come to mind?
Yeah, totally. I love events. So when possible, try to attend live events. And I would encourage you not just to attend a live event, but consider doing a meetup as a part of the event. So if you're attending a conference, maybe go ahead and use that hashtag and find a local Starbucks or something where you can just get people together in an informal setting and pick a time that's not conflicting with the event and then put it out there. Have courage, you know, use eventbrite.com and create an event and say, hey, this is the, you know, the meetup for this particular conference or whatever. It's going to be on this day at this time at Starbucks. And if you like, you can register here. And I've started doing that. I started doing that a few years ago, and I still do that to this day. Sometimes when I have to travel for my day job, I'll be in a certain city and I'll be like, hey, let's just do a meetup. You know, I'm not in this city for podcasting, but let me see if I can just create a meetup where some podcasters can get together. And I've done that a number of times. It's always a real powerful thing, David, because when people are able to come together that with like-minded folks who get it, it just creates that synergy, and it's just an encouraging thing. And it's a value add too. People appreciate it. So I think going to conferences are great because you can meet people and interact with people face to face. And if you can take that a step beyond that and maybe have a meetup where you can host yourself or with a couple other people, maybe a blogger or another podcaster or a video person that's in the same niche or same space as you, same category. That could be a fun thing too. You can try that. My friend Dan and I, we did a meetup in Dallas. I'm not from Dallas. I live in Florida, but I was going to be in Dallas for a conference. And so I reached out to Dan, who lives in Dallas, and said, hey, I want to do a meetup. Could we combine our audiences? Could I share this with my podcast audience and you share this with your podcast audience? And then we just have a meetup there in Dallas. And he's like, yeah, let's try it. So I didn't know if it was anybody was going to come to this, David, but we did the exact thing I'm telling you. We found a little place where we could have an informal meetup. It was just at a restaurant. And we put it out to our networks. We put it out to our podcast. Say, hey, Dallas, Texas, on this day at this time, here's where it is. Here's the website where you can go register. We just used a free Eventbrite page. And next thing you know, I think we had 25 people come to a meetup. And for a new podcast that didn't have, you know, a ton of social proof and
yeah,
a ton of these things, that was such a huge encouragement to both our podcasts to say, hey, we've been able to collaborate here, and now we've got people that are coming together to this meetup. And that's not something we charge for or anything. It was just, hey, can we get people together? And in that case, we were able to, and that compelled us to go and try some other things. So I love meetups. I'd say go to events, and then when it makes sense, try to collaborate with someone and host a meetup at that event. I think that's a really great way to continue to grow your network and continue to grow the visibility of what you're working on.
Yeah, great tips. Anything related to digital marketing or online that you've done that seems to work to build your audience or promote your show?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many good things you can do online. I mean, we use Facebook ads for Podcast Movement. I don't claim for a moment that I'm a expert in Facebook ads. We have a really awesome Facebook community. So a lot of our conversations are happening on Facebook, but we also are having conversations on Twitter and Instagram, some other places. And I kind of have a bad joke about that. I like to tell people, hey, I try to stay fit. I use Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Yeah, Facebook. Instagram, and Twitter. So anyway, yeah, I mean, we do some things like that. Another idea is writing a self-published book. And that's actually not too difficult. I've seen some podcasters take a number of their episodes and transcribe them and then kind of clean them up a little bit and put that into a little book on Amazon. And I think it's a smart move, even if it's not making a lot of money. It's just a place for people to discover them that probably not listening to podcasts. And I've experienced that myself. I have a self-published book that's in Amazon. There's a number of people that find out about me through Amazon that don't listen to podcasts. They have no intention of going to Podcast Movement. So, yeah, I think there's a number of ways. Be active in other communities online and add value to those groups and generously connect with those people. And then if it makes sense, take something that you're already working on, repurpose it into a self-published book and put it on Amazon, because there's going to be a number of people that find you through that. It's a tremendous discovery tool. So
yeah, absolutely.
Those are some ideas. Not, yeah. not Maybe not the answer you're looking for, but those are some things you can try.
No, it definitely is. And I'll include a link to your book. So tell us the name of the book just so they can hear it.
Well, that book particularly is Podcasting Good to Great. And then there's a subtitle, which is How to Grow Your Audience Through Collaboration. And the purpose of that book is more, how can I collaborate with people with a sense of growing what I'm working on? In that case, it's podcasting, but it can be applicable to more than just podcasting. I've had a number of people say, hey, this is a networking book. So I thought that was kind of a nice compliment.
Yeah, yeah. So it can be used for really anybody that's doing their craft, whether it's podcasting or building a business, right?
Right.
And you've got a another book that's been recently published, is that right?
Yeah, that kind of goes back to what we were talking to earlier, and that book is called Stop Chasing Influencers. And the purpose of that book is to say, hey, you know, there's a common mistake that a lot of people make online, and that's focusing on the guru, trying to do what the guru does. And there's wisdom in learning from people who've got experience. But the problem is some people get so wrapped up in the guru that they are not taking actual steps themselves. And so the book is more of an encouragement and a strategy on how you can grow your own influence, how you can make some progress with your online efforts, rather than being so focused on someone else that you're putting all your money and your time and your resources into someone else's dream rather than your own.
Yeah, and that leads me to another question about marketing. Have you, and this will be my last question about marketing specifically, but have you seen, is there any common knowledge or things that are maybe shared by gurus or what people are thinking they should be doing that you, as somebody that's been around a long time, sees that it doesn't work? You know, is there any misleading information about how to promote or grow a show that you think should be that needs to be corrected for the record?
Well, there's a long laundry list. So, you know, what I can say is, rather than being worried about what doesn't work, is don't worry about numbers. That's a booby trap. We already just hit on that a little bit. You know, love on the handful that are gracious enough to check out what you're doing, get to know them. That is a good strategy. It's a long-term strategy, and you have to subscribe to that. If you're not willing to be patient, then podcasting or really whatever idea you feel compelled to pursue, that's probably not going to be something you're going to last long with if you can't go ahead and say, hey, I gotta be patient and I got to work on this. And I think that's unfortunate, but there's a number of people that give up way too soon. I've had a lot of friends who I've seen try things, and they're like, I'm not getting, you know, this desired outcome, so I'm going to just move on. And a part of me is a little sad when I see that, because I think this person's got great potential, and this was a good idea. Maybe they were just too impatient. You know,
yeah,
maybe if they just
give enough time.
Yeah, they'd given it some more time, they would have hit that tipping point. And so that's the thing I see is, you know, be willing to be patient. And for those, I heard this once, and I really think this is a nice way to put it, is success is could be for some people. Success could be the person who's willing to outlast the lucky and outwork the lazy, mm-hmm. right? If you can stick around and be consistent over the long term, you're gonna outlast the lucky and outwork the lazy, and that's a form of success. So I think that's a great way to put it.
Yeah, I like that quote. Do you have any podcasts that you would consider your favorite podcast? What do you like to listen to?
You know, I'm not listening to as many business podcasts anymore.
Sure.
But there was a time when that's all I consumed, and it was fun at the time. But then I heard a lot of stuff that was repetitive, and I'm like, I gotta listen to some other stuff because, you know, this is like over time it just wore on me. So I'm not listening to as many marketing and business type podcasts. But sure. If business and marketing podcasts are your thing, a couple that I do think are very quality and that give good value is Jody Mayberry's show. Jody's a good friend, and I love what he does. I really like Donald Kelly. He does a show called The Sales Evangelist. So for someone who's wanting to increase their sales and be better at sales, so that is a great free resource. Awesome podcast. Another podcast out there that I think is valuable is Crowdfund Genius. So if crowdfunding interests you and you think, hey, someday I want to create a crowdfunding campaign for, you know, this idea that I have, then that's a you cannot beat that free resource. It is fantastic. So those are three that stick out, at least in a business marketing kind of realm. Yeah. And then a couple others that I know have really been Something I've enjoyed is I listen to a number of church podcasts. I know not everybody's going to be into that. So one that I really like is, I'm looking it up right now, it's a podcast called Providence Church. They're based out of Dallas. And I really like the pastor of that church. So if you're into that, that's a good show to check out. Criminal is a great one. Phoebe Judge, she's going to be a podcast movement. That's a show, just each episode they talk about a different crime and kind of how it played out. And it's pretty fascinating. They do a good job with that. And then The Way I Heard It with Mike Rowe is really good. That's short stories. And it's kind of like Paul Harvey used to do, the radio legend. You know, he talked about the rest of the story. Mike Rowe, who, you know, is from Dirty Jobs and a number of things. Mike Rowe does The Way I Heard It, and it reminds me of Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story.
Yeah.
So that's a fun show.
I just listened to him being interviewed by Tim Ferriss, which was a great, but it was very good. And yeah, he mentions that's kind of what he was going for. It's on my list to check out as well.
Absolutely. I listened to every episode of that. And if it's okay, I'll just do one more.
Yeah, please.
One more that I think is worth checking out. I'm going to say the last one that's worth checking out is, depending on what you're into, you may or may not like this one. This is called Beautiful Stories from Anonymous People. And it's a comedian named Chris Gethard. And he's having random phone conversations with people he doesn't know. And they have an hour to talk about whatever they want. And at any point, they can hang up. And I know that sounds random, but there are some really, really humorous episodes that come out of that show. So that's been one I've enjoyed a few episodes. There's some, you know, there can be some language and situations in that show that may not be, you know, great for everybody.
Sure,
but
sure.
That said, I think it's a pretty interesting show and pretty creative.
If I were to ask you what the most remarkable podcast you listen to is there one that stands out as just kind of being in a class of its own?
No, I mean, you know, there's so many good podcasts out there. It's really hard to say. I mean, many people I look up to, too, that do podcasting their own way. And that's the beauty of podcasting is not regulated in a sense. You can just do whatever you feel compelled to do. And for some person, that's going to be, you know, sharing a short story that they wrote. For some people, that's going to be an interview. For some people, that's going to be, you know, just super meticulous editing and, you know, layering stories and, you know, I mean, there's so many cool things you can do with audio. And so there's a number of people that I look up to. And I love podcasting for that reason, is it doesn't have to be fancy. I know people just, they just hit record and they read their blog post. And for them, that's great. And their audience really appreciates that. So it doesn't have to be over the top. If it's good value, then there's a lot of people that are likely to listen to it.
Do you have any insider perspective or predictions for where podcasting is heading over the next year or two? Do you ever think about that? Or,
you know, it's very likely that there's going to continue to be growth in podcasting because of its on-demand nature, because more and more people having mobile devices and then vehicles having access to podcasts, easier access to podcasts. So I do see growth, Apple TV, things like that. I don't think it's going away. I think you're going to see a lot of good shows and really creative stuff that's coming up. I think you're going to see some networks develop that are kind of like paywall, kind of like cable TV in a sense. There's going to be like a paywall where, okay, if you pay a subscription fee, you can subscribe and get access to certain content, kind of like HBO or something like that. You know what I mean? I think you're going to see things like that happen with podcasting. And there's going to be plenty of free stuff that's high quality and really good. And then there's going to be some paywall subscription stuff that also has really good stuff. And, you know, if you want to get access to that, you'll just have to pay a little bit. But it'll be, you know, for some it'll be worth it and for some it won't be. So I think you're going to see a lot more of that kind of thing. And, you know, there's plenty of room for growth in podcasting. So there's plenty of stuff that we haven't even thought about that I'm sure we're going to start seeing in the next several years. So that's exciting, too.
Yeah. Have you seen anybody monetize their podcast in an unusual way, you know, other than ads or maybe selling a course? Have you seen anybody?
Yeah. I mean, there's, you know, of course, the donation method where people can support like a Patreon or a you know, crowdfunding in the sense of, here's my show. And, you know, if you like, you can contribute. And there's different rewards and, you know, some people will jump on that wagon and support something monthly. And so I've seen that. I think it's likely to see growth in that. But that tends to be really valuable for people that have larger audiences. But for the little guy, you know, I think there's going to have to be new opportunities that are created for the little guy, because there's not a lot out there right now. And I think for the little guy, don't get discouraged. Just continue to make something really good and really valuable. And I believe if you do that long enough, there's going to be new opportunities that open up. So monetization in podcasting, everybody wants it, but it's not as easy to come by. I've seen some people, they charge to have a guest on their show, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You know, some folks do that. Some folks, you know, they, like you said, they sell a product or a service. And then, you know, if you're going to get a sponsor, it's typically valued by how many listeners you have. So sponsorships can be a challenge. It's not impossible, though. My friend Neil Gilarte, he started a show that didn't have a massive audience, and he was able to get some sponsors, and he leveraged like a full package where you're being talked about on the show. You're getting, you know, different real estate on my website. You're getting mentions each day on social media. Like, he created like a full package that he then went to a sponsor, and he was able to sell them, you know, something that was valuable to them. So it exists. I think it's who wants to be creative, who wants to try something different, and you know, what organization is going to find value in that. And, you know, partnerships, I think the people that do get sponsorship money, in most cases, if they're little players, they have relationships with the sponsors, and they're in a partnership in the sense of, hey, I'm helping your business grow and you're helping my podcast grow. And so keep that in mind too. If sponsorship's something that's interesting, you need to be thinking about, I need to be building relationships with the people that would want to sponsor the show, because that's step one. Everything else is, you know, jumping or putting the cart before the horse. And then, you know, if you got a show that's got, you know, thousands and thousands of listeners, you know, getting a sponsor is not going to be that hard. You can do that pretty easily. But for the little guy, you got to build relationships, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, and I think Glenn the Geek talks a lot about that.
Yes.
I interviewed him, and he had some really great tips on even just starting out with some small sponsors at $50 a month. Or, you know, just just start where you are.
He is absolutely the expert on that, and he's done fantastic with it, and he's treated his, you know, his sponsors with such care and such love that they are raving fans of him and the Horse Radio Network. And every month they're signing up and like, we're in, we want to be a part of this. And it works. The listeners love it. It brings value, and the sponsors get something out of it. And it's provided income for Glenn and his family. So yeah, he's an absolute great person to model if that's something that you want to do with sponsorships, kind of like not the standard way that podcasters are doing it.
Yeah, he's full of great information and in a different perspective, kind of coming from the outside world to the world of podcasting. That was really good.
Totally.
Well, Jared, where can people go to learn? Where do you want to send people?
Well, they should be checking out your podcast first and foremost.
No, this is about you. This is about you.
Let's make this clear. Listen to every episode on this show first. And once you're waiting on the next episode, if you want to listen to Star of the Doubts, that's the name of my podcast, you can easily check out a number of episodes there while you wait for David's next episode. So Star of the Doubts is the podcast. And then the event that we were referring to earlier, that's Podcast Movement. You can check that out at podcastmovement.com. If you decide that's something you want to go to, you can use the promo code LAUNCH. And that will save you $50 off registration. Awesome. Launch is the promo code. But if not, that's cool. You can check it out and maybe say, all right, maybe next year. No worries either way. But definitely keep being subscribed to David's podcast. This is a great thing.
You're so generous. Well, I'm going to say, if you're listening now, to please, if you're interested in podcasting or if you've already got a show, come join us at Podcast Movement. I was there last year, and it was early stages of me getting my ideas together for my show. And I don't think I would even have a show if I didn't go. And I look forward to getting back there. So I'll include that discount code on the notes page. But I do highly recommend it. It's a really great event.
I appreciate that, David. Coming from you, that means a lot.
Thanks. Well, Jared, I really appreciate your time. Thanks for all your insight and giving me some time and some tips today.
Of course, David. My pleasure, man. We'll be in touch.
Yeah, definitely. Take care.
Thanks again.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Remarkable, part of the Super Simple Podcast Network. I appreciate you taking time to listen, and I hope you got as much out of it as I did. You can find my notes from this interview, relevant links, and a full transcript at supersimple.com/Jared. That's SUPERSIMPL.com/JARED. If you enjoyed this episode or learned something to help you with your podcast or business, please do me a favor and share it with someone else. Also, I highly recommend you check out both of Jared's books on Amazon, especially his first book, Podcasting Good to Great, which is full of great tips for growing your podcast through collaboration. I believe right now it's only 99 cents on Amazon for the Kindle edition. I've included links on the show notes page mentioned above. And as Jared mentioned, if you're interested in attending the Podcast Movement Conference July 6th through the 8th in Chicago, use code LAUNCH at checkout to save $50. And if you do go, please let me know so we can connect. I'd love to meet you there. And as always, if you have a question about marketing, a suggestion or feedback, or if you just want to connect, go ahead and email me at dave@supersimple.com. This episode of Remarkable is sponsored by Bethesda Roasting Company, a North Carolina-based small batch gourmet coffee roaster that prides itself on offering only the highest quality single origin coffee from around the world, perfectly roasted to present the best flavors of each varietal. In addition to using only quality beans, all coffees are roasted within 72 hours of being shipped. And as a coffee snob with 9 different ways to make coffee at home, I can tell you that if you've never had coffee brewed within 72 hours, you do not know what you're missing. Fresh coffee is night and day from anything you've ever purchased in a grocery store. So head on over to BethesdaCoffee.com to check out their monthly subscription plan so you can get it fresh to your door. You can use code SUPERSIMPLE50 at checkout to save 50% on your first purchase of either their Explorer or Adventurer subscriptions. That's BethesdaCoffee.com, and I promise you will not be disappointed. Our theme music was composed by Julio Gonzalez at Zymer. Zymer, or Remix, spelled backwards, offers sound design and audio post-production for podcasts, video, audiobooks, game, apps, and radio. In addition to my theme music, I've also been using Zymer for some of my post-production work, and I've been extremely pleased with the result. You can learn more about them or contact them today at zymer.co. That's ximer.co. And tell Julio you heard about Zymer on the Remarkable podcast. You can save 50% on any of their services. And if you would like additional marketing resources, early access to my free podcast marketing course designed to help you grow your audience and reach more listeners, and to be notified when I release future episodes, head on over to theremarkablepodcast.com. That's it. Thanks again for listening to this episode of Remarkable.